Hello, and welcome to Worth It, a podcast brought to you by Proskauer's Private Client Services Group, covering a wide range of topics concerning estate planning, wealth transfers, important legal developments, and other issues our clients frequently face when organizing their estates. My name is Jacob Wan. I'm an associate in Proskauer's New York office. In this episode, we'll be discussing qualified personal residence trusts, also known as QPERTs, how they work, what they do, what the benefits are, and why clients might consider this particular estate planning technique right now. Joining me for this episode is Natalie Stenmark, associate in Proskauer's LA office. Welcome, Natalie.
Thank you for having me, Jacob.
Thanks for joining today, Natalie. And could you just tell us what is a QPERT exactly, and how does it work?
Right, so a qualified personal residence trust, also known as a QPERT, is a gifting technique where an individual transfers an interest in a personal residence to a trust, making a gift of the remainder interest while retaining the exclusive use of the residence for a term of years. And the QPERT will freeze the value of the taxpayer's residence at the time he or she creates the trust, and this can result in significant tax savings. So let me take you through the different steps of the QPERT. Step one is to create the QPERT for a term of years and designate remainder beneficiaries. The grantor will then contribute the residence to the trust, thereby creating a taxable gift at that time. Now, the trust can be funded using either a principal residence, a vacation home or secondary residence, or a fractional interest in either of those. The fair market value of the residence is discounted for gift tax purposes, but note that this gift does not qualify for the annual gift tax exclusion since the transfer of the residence to a QPERT is not a gift of a present interest. Then the second step is the use of the residence. The grantor retains the exclusive rent-free use, possession, and enjoyment of the residence during the term of the QPERT. The grantor pays any ordinary and recurring expenses, such as property taxes, insurance, and minor repairs. However, if the grantor makes a capital improvement, the cost is treated as an additional gift to the trust, and the amount of the taxable gift is based on the fair market value of the improvement as well as the remaining term of the QPERT. So that's something to keep in mind. Then step three, for the QPERT technique to be effective for estate tax purposes, the grantor must outlive the term of the trust. If the grantor dies before the trust term expires, the date of death value of the QPERT will be included in the grantor's estate and will be subject to estate tax. However, the grantor's estate will receive full credit for any tax consequences of the initial gift to the QPERT, so really the grantor is no worse off than if he or she had not created the QPERT in the first place. So minimal risk there. Finally, the termination of the QPERT. If the grantor outlives the term of the trust, the residence will pass to the beneficiaries at the end of the term. This can be either directly to the beneficiaries or a trust established for their benefit. At the end of the QPERT term, the grantor can lease the residence back from the beneficiaries at fair market rent, thereby allowing the grantor to continue living in the residence. Note that these rental payments that the grantor makes will also further reduce the value of his or her estate. So it's an opportunity to get more money across the tax funds.
That's really helpful background, Natalie. Thank you. So I understand that QPERTs in recent years were not as popular or common, but the interest in them is resurging among estate planners. And I was wondering if you could explain why that is and why now is a good time to create a QPERT.
Of course, and I'll get into the tax mechanics and the benefits in a minute, but just high level, when interest rates rise, the value of the right to remain in the residence increases, and this results in a lower gift as the higher value of the right to remain in the residence is subtracted from the fair market value of the residence at the time of the gift. So the current rising interest rate environment has resulted in a renewed interest in QPERTs. We're seeing more and more clients engage in this type of planning. So the value of the grantor's retained right to live in the personal residence is determined actuarially using statistical tables published each month by the IRS. And the value of the retained interest will depend on prevailing interest rates, the length of the trust term, and the age of the grantor. And as the term increases, the value of the grantor's retained interest also increases, resulting in a decrease in the amount of the actual gift made. The federal interest rate under Code Section 7520 is one of the main factors that drive the favorable tax outcome of valuing the gift of the residence. So as I was saying, the higher the federal interest rate, the lower the gift value, and the lower the potential gift tax. Conversely, a low federal interest rate usually translates into lower estate tax savings, which is why we haven't seen this technique be used as much in the recent years when we've had low interest rates.
So thanks for explaining how those different factors impact the tax benefits of a QPERT. But I guess it's a little hard to grasp in the abstract, and I'm wondering if you might be able to provide a more concrete example of how this might work.
Absolutely. So take an example of a $10 million house with Section 75 20 interest rate of 5% with a grantor aged 65 and a term of 20 years. Based on these factors, the value of the retained interest would be approximately $8.1 million, and the taxable gift, which is the present value of the remainder interest, would be approximately $1.9 million. So the potential death tax savings based on these factors and circumstances would be $3.25 million, and that's without factoring in any growth in the house. If we factor in a 5% annual growth in the property, then the estate tax savings would be $9.9 million, so significantly higher.
That's impressive. So essentially, the value of the remainder interest is what gets taken out of the grantor's estate and is allowed to grow tax-free. Is that right? So that's what produces the tax savings?
Exactly. So you take the value at the end of the term, and then you subtract out the taxable gift. So under this example, that would be $1.9 million. And then you multiply that by 40%, the current estate tax rate, and that's how you get to the tax savings.
Okay, interesting. So I guess moving on from these more technical tax-based aspects, I think it would be helpful for listeners to know a little bit more about specific requirements relating to CUPERTs or pitfalls that that could cause a CUPERT to be unsuccessful or invalid. For example, I know that the CUPERT has to be used as a personal residence during the term, right? Could you explain how that works?
One of the requirements, as you just mentioned, is that the property must be used as a personal residence. If the property ceases to be used as a personal residence, then the trust will cease to be a CUPERT altogether, and the trustee must distribute the assets outright to the grantor or convert the CUPERT into a grantor retained annuity trust, a GRAT. For instance, while leasing a portion of the property to an unrelated third party will not result in disqualification in and of itself, as long as the property remains the grantor's personal residence. Now, what does this mean? For instance, for a property that is occasionally rented, a taxpayer is deemed to use a dwelling unit during the taxable year as a residence if such taxpayer uses the unit or a portion thereof for personal purposes for a number of days that exceeds the greater of 14 days or 10% of the number of days during the year for which the unit is rented at a fair market value.
So you said this term dwelling unit in the test for whether the residence is treated as the grantor's personal residence. What exactly does that mean?
So the term dwelling unit is defined to include a house, an apartment, a condominium, a mobile home, boat, or similar property that provides basic living accommodations, so it's quite a broad term.
Okay, and what about if you have, you know, a larger estate that's not just a house, but if there are other buildings or land or other connected property, does that factor into the analysis?
Right, so a personal residence may include certain additional property used by the term holder, the grantor, for residential purposes. And certain factors will be taken into consideration, such as the residence's size and location. So for instance, the IRS has ruled that a personal residence may include a tennis court or a swimming pool, and it can also include a main house and a guest house, but it all depends on the facts and circumstances and the size of the property itself.
And so the property has to be used as a personal residence during the term of the CUPERT. Does that mean that the grantor isn't allowed to sell the property? Can it still be sold during the term? And if so, what happens?
So if the personal residence is sold, the sales proceeds must be reinvested into a new residence. If that does not occur, then again, the CUPERT will convert into a GRAT or the assets must be distributed out to the grantor.
Okay. And you said before at the start of this that each CUPERT has a term and the grantor needs to survive for the entire term or else it fails. Can you explain what happens if the grantor dies during the term?
Right, so that isn't yet another requirement of the CUPERT for it to work. So if the grantor dies before the expiration of the trust term, the entire value of the personal residence will be included in the grantor's estate for estate tax purposes. And as I mentioned before, this is not really a significant risk because in that event, the grantor would merely be in the same position that he or she would have been in if the CUPERT had not been created in the first place, but you're not going to get the benefits of the CUPERT.
Right, so we've talked about all of these tax benefits that make a CUPERT quite attractive. And I'm curious if you have a grantor with multiple houses, if they say have 10 houses, could they put each one into a CUPERT and realize these benefits for each one?
So a person can only transfer two personal residences to a CUPERT, and also any commercial property or non-real property, such as fixtures and appliances, they won't count. And the grantor cannot transfer an interest in two personal residences to the same trust. Rather, separate trusts must hold the interest in separate residences. However, a person can contribute fractional interest in the same residence to different Q-Berts.
And is there any benefit to doing that, to contributing a fractional interest as opposed to the whole residence?
Yes, so there are two main benefits to using fractional interest. The first being as a hedge against the possibility of premature death. For example, a taxpayer might create three Q-Berts with terms of 5, 10, and 15 years. Then the taxpayer could transfer one-third interest in his or her residence to each of those trusts. If he or she dies after, let's say, 12 years, only the one-third interest in the last Q-Bert is included in his or her estate. So that's one reason to do the fractional interest. Another reason to gift fractional interest in a residence is to get additional gift tax savings. For instance, if husband and wife retitle their personal residence as tenancy in common, then after such retitling, each spouse could then create his or her own Q-Bert by transferring his or her 50% tenants in common interest in the personal residence to his or her respective Q-Bert. So because each spouse is transferring an undivided tenancy in common interest to the Q-Bert, a further discount may be available in valuing each spouse's interest in the residence for gift tax purposes.
What about the situation where there's a mortgage on the house that's contributed to the Q-Bert? How does that factor into things?
So if the residence transferred to the Q-Bert is subject to a mortgage, that won't disqualify it, but there may be some added complexity in accounting for the mortgage payments. And note here, when I say mortgage payments, I'm referring to the principal payments. Interest payments are fine. They have no consequences. But for purposes of determining the value of the gift or the remainder interest, the mortgage on the property generally must be taken into consideration. So that would be the initial instance when you're valuing the gift. And then the grantor will be treated as making further contributions to the trust and consequently further gift with each mortgage principal payment. So if possible, paying off the mortgage before transferring the residence to a Q-Bert might be advisable, depending on all the facts and circumstances, or if it's possible to just have interest payments be made during the term, that will simplify things from an accounting perspective.
Okay, so one other question, going back to the potential sale of the residence during the Q-Bert term, you know, normally under Code Section 121, a person selling their principal residence is allowed to exclude a certain amount of gain from their gross income, so they have some income tax savings from that. Is that still available if the residence is placed in a Q-Bert?
Right, so a Q-Bert is a grantor trust for income tax purposes, and this means that the trust is not a separate taxpayer and all the income or capital gain during the term is taxed to the grantor and reported on his or her personal income tax return. So what this means is that any gain recognized on the sale of a principal residence that has been transferred to a Q-Bert may qualify for the $250,000 or $500,000 gain exclusion from the sale of a principal residence, provided that all the other Internal Revenue Code Section 121 requirements are met. And again, the exclusion of gain does not apply to the sale of a property that is not the principal residence, such as a vacation home.
So we've generally been talking about a lot of positives and tax benefits to creating a Q-Bert, but I'm just wondering if there are any other downsides that estate planners and clients should be aware of.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is if the remainder beneficiaries sell the residence after the expiration of the term, they may incur a significant income tax liability. If the Q-Bert had not been created and the children, for instance, if they were the beneficiaries, inherited the residence at the grantor's death, they would have received a step-up in basis to the value of the property at the grantor's date of death. But if the grantor survives the Q-Bert term and it goes to the remainder beneficiaries, there is no step-up in basis and the children's basis carries over from the grantor. So it really depends on the long-term goals of the clients, the grantors, their children, what they think, what they believe the future plans for the house may be.
So Natalie, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, you're an associate in our LA office, so you primarily practice California law. And I'm curious if there are any unique considerations that go into Q-Bert planning in California or any particular advantages of doing that in California.
So yes, interesting that you should bring that up. And I'm not sure if you've heard, but sales to grantor trusts of houses in the city of Los Angeles is about to get a lot more expensive after April 1st of 2023. There is a new additional 5.5% recording tax for homes sold for $10 million and above, and an additional 4% recording tax for homes sold for between $5 million and $10 million. I'm telling you, in the city of Los Angeles, there are many homes that are worth more than $5 million. So this impacts a lot of homes. For instance, if you were to sell a $10 million home to an irrevocable grantor trust now, the cost to record the deed would be $606,000 under the new rules that are about to take effect versus $56,000 under the current rules.
It's a huge difference.
Huge difference. Notably, the new recording tax does not apply if a home is transferred for no consideration. So contributing that same $10 million home to a QPERT is now $550,000 cheaper than a sale of that same house to an irrevocable grantor trust. So it really is something to factor in when you're running the numbers.
It sounds like all around, a QPERT can be a pretty attractive option, a good estate planning technique in a number of situations. So it's good to know that this option is available in appropriate cases, and hopefully our listeners find it helpful as well. Is there anything else that you want to say before we wrap up?
No, I think that's everything. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Thank you for coming. And I hope you have enjoyed your visit to New York. And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of Worth It. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and please join us for future episodes. If you'd like to receive notifications when new episodes are available, please visit our website, proskauer.com, and click the subscribe to our publications link at the bottom of any page. Thank you for listening.